January the 27th, we are in Yechezkel, and we are in Perek Mem Beis, chapter 42, and we are right in the beginning of the Perek, so we're up to the first Pasuk. Now, we've been using Rabbi Eisman's diagram, and I have been using his notes in my preparation extensively. He does an incredible job over here. For the rest of Yechezkel, when I've gone through it, I have not gone through everything he says in the rest of Yechezkel, but I've used his notes as interesting notes, and I've also looked at Rashi and other Mefarshim, and sometimes I've told you what he says, sometimes I haven't, depending on the subject matter. But for the third Beis HaMikdash, it is so incredibly complicated that without his notes, and especially without his diagram, I would be lost. I mean, this is just, what he did is an incredible, incredible work, and it's an incredible contribution to learning. This is most evident in what we're going to learn tonight. Okay. What we're going to learn tonight is so obscure in the Psukim, and Rashi himself writes in a couple of places over the next two Psukim that I don't know what these words are referring to. And Rashi actually says, as a disclaimer, once he gets further into this, he writes, and this is an incredible thing about Rashi too, because he didn't have about Eisman's diagram, right? Rashi says, "Va'ani lo haya li lo rav v'lo ozer b'chol habinin hazeh," and I did not have for me neither a rebbe nor any helper in this entire binyan, in this entire structure. Ela kamo sheheruni min hashamayim, only what they showed me from heaven.
Wow.
That's all I was able to figure out, Rashi said.
What does that mean?
It means that when he was inspired from Hashem, he was not taught this from any of his rebbeim. He had to figure it out on his own. So it's quite complicated, especially over here. So we're going to go through it, and Rabbi Eisman, using Rashi and then also using the Mitzudos, puts together a beautiful presentation. The main point that is going to be an issue over here is, right now we have discussed the outer court. We've discussed the order we've entered in is we've discussed the entranceway to the outer courtyard. We discussed the outer courtyard. We discussed the entranceway to the inner courtyard. We have not yet discussed the Mizbeach, the altar. We'll get to that later, Mitzvah Hashem. We discussed the entranceway into the sanctuary, and then we discussed the whole sanctuary with all of the chambers around it, etc. What we have not mentioned at all, the point we have not discussed yet at all, is these massive leshachos, these massive chambers that are located in the four corners over here. These chambers are 50 amos wide by 100 amos long, which is a massive room. That's a minimum of 75 feet by 150 feet, possibly 100 feet by 200 feet. That's a very large room. And that's where there's four of them in the courtyard. So we're going to now learn about the Leshachos. But what Yechezkel does is he talks about the northwest Lishka. That's what he talks about, the northwest chamber. Then he will mention the southwest chamber, but only in passing. His main focus is going to be the northwest chamber, and ostensibly what we're supposed to do is assume that all the chambers follow the same pattern as the northwest chamber. What becomes a point of discussion, and the reason why it's not simple at all to read Rashi or any of the Mefarshim, is we have a beautiful diagram over here with four chambers: northwest, southwest, northeast, southeast. It is not clear that the northeast and southeast chambers actually existed. We have them on our diagram because that's the approach that Rabbi Eisman chose to use, and that's what many of the Mefarshim choose to use, like the Mitzudos. But it is not clear at all that that's the case. It is not universally agreed upon. So we will learn through, and I'll show you where the point of contention is, where do these chambers actually exist. Clearly, they're not going to be mentioned explicitly in the text. It's going to be something that we're going to have to figure out. What is the purpose of the Lashachos? That's also going to be discussed tonight. And also, how they are accessed. Now, what is the purpose of the Lashachos? It's worthwhile to know this before we begin, so that we know where we're going over here. At least the purpose of the northwest and southwest chambers. The northeast and southeast chambers are not clear at all what their purpose is, since we don't even know if they were there. But the northwest and southwest chambers would be as follows. We have in the Beis HaMikdash, in the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, the third Beis HaMikdash, we have gradations in Kedusha and sanctity. We're all aware of that. It stands to reason that if you are outside the wall of the courtyard, you're at a lower level of sanctity than when you're in the outer courtyard. That would be a higher level of sanctity. The inner courtyard is going to have an even higher level of sanctity than the outer courtyard. The Kodesh, the sanctuary, will have an even greater level of Kedusha. And of course, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, will have the greatest level of Kedusha, of sanctity. There are different karbonos, different sacrifices, that are offered throughout the year and for different reasons. Some are offered by individuals, some are offered by the tzibur, by the whole congregation. Some are offered because they're obligatory, some are voluntary. There are animal offerings, there are bird offerings, there are flower, F-L-O-U-R, offerings. Mm-hmm. Different types of offerings. The different types of offerings have different levels of sanctity. The basic two categories that you have in the sanctity of the karbanos, of the offerings, are kadshim kalim and kadshei kadshim. What does that mean? Kadshim kalim. Kadshim means offerings. They're called kadshim. Kadshim means holy, but it's referring to offerings. Kadshim kalim. Kal means light or easy or lenient. Kadshim kalim means the lighter type of offerings, and kadshei kadshim means the holiest type of offerings. That's the phrase used in the discussion of the two different types of offerings. So, for example, a karban pesach that we all would bring, and please God we will bring, before Pesach, the day of Pesach, on Erev Pesach, and eat it at the Seder, the night of Pesach, that karban pesach is kadshim kalim. That's a lighter level of Kedusha, of sanctity. That's one example. Whereas, if one does a sin, God forbid, and has to bring a karban chatas, a sin offering, that is kadshim, kadshei kadshim. That's a higher level of sanctity. What difference does it make? I mean, either way, you have to bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and it's offered, and it's slaughtered, and the blood is thrown on the altar, etc., etc. So what's the difference? So a difference, and this is why we're bringing all of this up, is where can the meat be taken? The meat that has to be eaten from the sacrifice, where can it be taken? Where can it be eaten? We all have to eat of the meat of the Karban Pesach, at least the Kezias, and the meat of a Karban Chatas, of a sin offering, is consumed by the Kohen, not by the person offering it, but by the Kohen. The question is, where can that meat be eaten? So the Karban Pesach, the kadshim kalim, the lighter type, can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim. Anywhere in Jerusalem. Now, of course, it means the old city. But anywhere in Yerushalayim, that's where kadshim kalim, the lighter type, could be eaten. Which is why you could have your Seder on Pesach night in your hotel in Yerushalayim. That's what the people did. They came, they slept over, they stayed in Yerushalayim. You didn't have to bring your whole family to Hotel Beit HaMikdash for Pesach. You didn't have to do that. You could stay anywhere in Yerushalayim as long as it was within the confines of the walls of Yerushalayim, then you could eat your Korban Pesach there. Because since it's Kodshim Kalim, it's the lower type or lighter type of sanctity, it didn't have to remain in the Beis HaMikdash. Kodshei Kodshim, that which is of the higher level of Kedusha, of sanctity, they have to remain in the Beis HaMikdash, and not only that, they have to remain in the level of sanctity of the inner courtyard, rather than the outer courtyard. Now, this could be a matter of debate, whether they could be brought into the outer courtyard or not, since we don't really know in the third Beis HaMikdash exactly what the threshold of Kedusha is going to be in the outer courtyard than the inner courtyard, but it is certainly plausible that they will have to be confined to the inner courtyard. That doesn't make much room for the Kohanim to eat of the various karbanos that are being offered. So it seems that the purpose of these chambers, at least the northwest and the southwest chambers, were to have a place that had equal sanctity to the inner courtyard where these karbanos could be consumed, where they could be eaten, as opposed to the Chatzer HaChitzona, the outer courtyard, which would have a level of Kedusha that was diminished and would be inappropriate for eating the karbanos. So it seems that that was the purpose of the Leshachos of the chambers. It's possible that that's true for the northeast and southeast chambers as well, but I don't know, since we don't even know if they were there. Now, this leads to another issue, which is access to the chambers. Because if the purpose of the chambers was to eat the karbanos in a proper place, and if those karbanos, the kadshe kadshim, the higher level of sanctity, could not be brought into the outer courtyard, how did you get your sacrifice, how did the kohen get the meat from the inner courtyard where it was slaughtered to the chambers to eat them? That becomes a problem. Now you'll notice, ignore for a moment these little openings here, which we'll talk about in a moment. But if you'll notice, just look at the walls of the chambers. The walls of the chambers, they come in contact with the walls of the inner courtyard, essentially blocking them off. And it appears, before you look at these little entrances here, but in terms of big openings, the big openings to the chambers are not accessible without first going into the outer courtyard. As if I wanted to go, or if I'm not a Kohen, but if I was a Kohen who has meat from a Karban Chatas, and he wants to take it to the northwest chamber, it seems the only way to get there would be to go into the outer courtyard and then go into the northwest chamber, or go around and come in through there. The only way it seems to get to the northeast or southeast chambers would be to go out and then come through the openings, which means you have to carry the meat through an area where you're not allowed to bring the meat. So, therefore, it seems that if this is the purpose of these chambers, there must be access to the chambers in a way that prevents the meat from being brought into the outer courtyard, where you can get directly from the inner courtyard to the chambers. So, that is why, if the northeast and southeast chambers exist, there must have also been a narrow passageway going from the inner courtyard to the two chambers. And that's why Abba Eisman has a small passageway, and he does find some expression for this in the psukim, in the verses, where the Kohanim would be able to take the meat into the chambers directly. What about in the northwest and southwest chambers? There we don't see any direct link from the inner courtyard to the chambers. So here, this is more explicit in the psukim, and Rashi says this as well. It seems that there must have been a way to get from the courtyard into this narrow area between the sanctuary and the courtyards and the chambers. Now, here's an important point. We've seen references to these, to this area, between the sanctuary and the chambers. We've seen before that this is the area of the 20 amos, because that's how much it was. It was 20 amos from the wall of the chamber to the wall of the sanctuary on both sides. It's called the area of the 20 amos. Now, looking at this picture, the way we have it, I assumed, just looking at the picture, that these 20 amos, they're certainly not part of the inner courtyard. The inner courtyard is walled off. It would seem to me they look like they're part of the outer courtyard. In fact, the outer courtyard is contiguous with the 20 amos. Mm-hmm. So, my uneducated assumption was that these 20 amos were the same level of sanctity as the outer courtyard rather than the inner courtyard. To this, Rabbi Eisen suggests, and he uses other Mefarshim to bolster his opinion, that the 20 amos here and here actually had the level of sanctity of the inner courtyard. And therefore, the way that a Kohen would be able to get the meat of the Kodshei Kodshim, the higher level of sanctity Karbanos, from the inner courtyard to the chambers to eat them without bringing them through the outer courtyard, would be to go through the narrow passage on either side over here, out of the inner courtyard, but into the 20 amos area, which also has the sanctity of the inner courtyard, and then go into the chamber, which also has that level of sanctity, and be able to eat it inside the chamber. That is the process that we're going to be studying this evening, showing where these openings were and how big the chambers were, etc. Yeah.
Couldn't they have eaten, you said it's a kazayas, couldn't they have eaten that in the inner courtyard, and then the rest of whatever is left over, they already had the sanctity of the kazayas, could have just walked out from there?
No, the meat, all the meat has
the
sanctity.
All the meat had to stay in the inner
sanctuary. Yeah, and it all had to be finished. If it wasn't finished, then it became nosar, it became leftover, and it had to be burned.
Right.
The goal was to finish the whole thing. There was a lot of meat that had to be consumed by the Kohanim in a short amount of time.
Once again, 1 amos
is
2.5 feet?
1 amos is between 1.5 and 2 feet.
I'm so confused. If the 20 amos area is the same sanctity as the inner courtyard, why even have the chambers? Why not just have that 20
okay.
amos area so bigger?
Right. That's a good question.
And then the second part of that question is, if Hashem doesn't tell us the sanctity levels of these areas, is there any way for a human being to know?
Well, I'm assuming you will become more clear when it's built. We're doing this all from a description without it being in front of us.
Right.
I'm assuming when it's built, you know, there'll be labels.
You know. Okay.
You know.
So why
farewell.
Is the 20 amos so bigger then? I mean, are these chambers covered in the 20 amos form? I'm trying to figure out the difference.
No, one thing I don't even know is where would the sanctity end in the 20 amos? Meaning, is it till here? Does it include the area behind the sanctuary? I don't know where the line is. So the whole thing is not clear to me. But that's what we're struggling with over here.
Where in that path that goes from the not the inner courtyard, the Kodesh. There's a diagonal line that goes to the 20 amos.
Yeah, so I was going to mention that as well. We had learned that the first small chamber on the, what is that? That's the northeast side of the sanctuary has a door to go into the 20 amos area. Hmm. That we learned before. And so that would be another way to access it. What the purpose of it is, I don't know, but there was another way.
But at what point does the Kedusha go from being the sanctity of Kedusha to just, you know, courtyard Kedusha?
Well, you mean at what point during this thing? I'm not sure, because the chambers, I don't think, had the Kedusha of the sanctuary.
Did they have?
They probably had the Kedusha of the inner courtyard. Probably. That's what I'm assuming. It would be strange to say that the chamber had the kedusha of the outer courtyard, and then if you walked further, you would now have the kedusha of the inner courtyard. It's a little bit strange.
Well, the proximity to the kadosh and the kadosh kadoshim of the two areas that are flanking, you know, by itself seems that it would raise it up, and also that you have access. There.
Right. That's what's being assumed.
And then it's protect that. Also, the sanctuary is protected by the two chambers on either side. So whether these northeast and southeast chambers exist at all, but those make sense to exist because they're protecting the sanctuary.
Does the meat all get cooked or whatever thoroughly when it's on the altar?
No.
I notice, I keep looking at these cooking chambers. Think of it.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. No, the meat would not get cooked on the altar at all. The only meat that was put onto the altar was that which would have to be burned, totally burned.
But to eat it,
they would cook it.
So they could, that meat
could not be brought to the cooking chambers. That meat, there would have to be other places to cook them, perhaps in the chambers. But these corner cooking chambers, which by the way we have not learned about yet, wasn't even mentioned yet in Yechezkel. We'll have to get to them later, but we won't get to them tonight either. But these chambers must be for cooking the kadshim kalim for the lower level of sanctity. Because otherwise, how do you get them into the chambers?
How do you get into them?
How do you? And there's no opening mentioned over here. Like, it's not clear at all.
Weren't there underground tunnels?
What I said?
Weren't there underground tunnels?
Possibly. I don't know. We'll find out.
Didn't they hide stuff? Didn't they go under the underground tunnels?
You're talking in the second Beis Hamikdash.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean it here. Right. We'll see. We'll see when we get to that. It's also interesting that the chambers also serve to divide up the outer courtyard. See, if you don't have the northeast and southeast chambers, the outer courtyard becomes a much larger area, becomes more usable space. These chambers really block it off. Imagine we're talking about thousands and thousands of people visiting the Beis HaMikdash. When you have this large courtyard area, which was 100 amos by 100 amos, okay, that's great, you have a lot of room. But then if you want to move to another area in the courtyard, you have to go through this narrow, it's only 11 amos over here to get through. And that's the real bottleneck. So if they didn't exist, to me, it makes more sense in this regard that they would not be there, because that just makes more room for the thousands of people to use the Beis HaMikdash effectively. If they are there, then, you know, if you wanted to go into, if you wanted to be on the south side, for example, you wouldn't go in through the east gate and then go this way, because you probably ended up with a lot of people and, you know, a lot of traffic.
Because all we know is, like, from the second Beis HaMikdash, how many kohanim were there, let's say, at Pesach time, when everybody had to be there, and all the sacrifices going, and how many people were there in these courts? Like, I'm trying, and the women, aren't the women up in balconies? Yeah. Where are the women?
Yeah, the women are up in balconies, but you're talking about the busiest carbon day of the year.
The busiest day,
which was Erev Pesach.
Right.
Erev Pesach was the busiest day. I gave a shiur on this a few years ago about Erev Pesach. That is the busiest day, and then I imagine hundreds of thousands of people.
So we don't have actual numbers.
The whole family. See,
I don't know the numbers.
The whole family didn't have to come in there.
No, only one representative had to come, but you had
each family for each carbon.
For each carbon Pesach. One person had to bring the carbon Pesach, but you still had them. Yerushalayim was jam-packed with people.
I can't imagine where they all went. You know?
Jam-packed, because everybody had to come. Men, women, and children. Everybody had to come. It was packed solid with people. And then you had to have one representative from each carbon Pesach take a sheep. Remember, it's not just people, it's sheep.
Yeah.
Right? So you have each person and his sheep coming into the Beis HaMikdash. And then you had to have that was the day where the Kohanim were what's that?
Sheep, bulls and goats.
No, just sheep. Sheep or goat, but it was most commonly sheep.
Didn't we
have
Sukkot?
Yeah.
There were some
a whole 80.
Yeah, yeah, 80, but 80 is nothing compared to the Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach, I'm talking about thousands. The Karban Pesach, the Pesach offering, has to be either a sheep or a goat. And it was mostly sheep. I mentioned to you once in the past that there is an eyewitness account from a Roman officer who wrote that he was in Yerushalayim on Erev Pesach, and he was standing on a hill overlooking the city, and he writes that all he saw was white because of the sheep. Just the thousands and thousands of sheep that were there in the city to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash for the Karban. It's a lot of, so we have to assume that there's some kind of nace going on, some kind of miracle going on, because as we know, you know, to fit everybody would be impossible.
Did only the Kohanim do the slaughtering?
The slaughtering, the actual slaughtering itself, could be done by a non-Kohen.
Oh. The Levites? No.
It could be a regular Israel could do it, the slaughtering.
They could go into the...
You would have to stand, you'd have to, if the line of demarcation was here, so the non-Kohen would stand here, the Kohen would stand here, the animal would be here, and he would reach over and slaughter the animal. From that point on, he had to be a Kohen. The Kohen had to catch the blood, the Kohen had to take the blood to the altar and throw it on the altar, and the Kohen had to, you know, the whole process had to be done with the Kohen.
So if you looked at a sin, if the meat could not be consumed by all the Kohen, and was that like a negative...
It was not appropriate for the Kohanim to leave over any of the meat that had to be eaten. The Karban Pesach was not an issue.
But I'm not talking about daily, sort of.
Yeah, daily depends. See, some of the sacrifices are completely consumed by on the Mizbech, completely burned. They're not eaten at all. Like the Karban Ola, the Tamid, which was brought one in the morning, one in the afternoon, that was an Ola. An Ola is completely burned. None of it is eaten.
And Hatas
was eaten by the Kohen. That's right.
I wonder what it smelled like.
Big barbecue.
That's what? Big
barbecue.
Roasted meat. Over an open fire.
What about the shalem?
The shalem was partially burned, partially eaten by the Kohen, partially eaten by the owner.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. There's five different offerings, right?
There's more than five. There's a whole bunch.
What were the measurements of the lishka?
50 amas by 100 amas. Okay, that was the easy part. Now we have to read it inside. This is the hard part. We're going to try our best here. Alice. Now, let me, if you don't, excuse me one moment.
Somewhere, the philosophical reasons as to why Hashem would want thousands and thousands of sheep slaughtered. I mean, God wants us to. Bounty.
Better
bounty
than us.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true, right. That was there ever anything written that somebody said, this is something, explained it.
I don't know, but I don't think the animal rights people liked it much.
That's a modern Mishigas.
That's not a animal.
Like animals more than Baruch Atah Adonai
Elohim
Shah
Kol
Nivrah.
Mainly.
Yeah, I mean, animals are. We're looking in the wrong way, I guess.
We're talking about a lot of sin.
You're making an assumption that it has to do with man's desire to kill.
There are different
discussions about karbanos, but you don't say that picking up a lulav and esrog is because man has a desire to pick up plants.
Right.
So why is this necessarily because man has a desire to kill? You know, I don't think man has a desire to eat unleavened bread either. But there's a mitzvah to do it. So, no, there are discussions about it. It doesn't trouble me, so I've never really looked into it that much, but there are discussions about it. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Vayotzieni el hachatzer hachitzona, and he took me out to the outer courtyard. So he had been standing in the inner courtyard, and now he, meaning the angel who was leading Yechezkel, took me out to the outer courtyard. Haderech derech hatzafon, he took me out through the northern way. So on our diagram that's on the right, he went through the right hand whatever you call this, entranceway or exit into the outer courtyard.
Vayivieni el halishka, and he brought me to the chamber, asher neged hagizra, that was next to the gizra means the fortress, meaning the next to the sanctuary, vasher neged habinyan el hatzafon, and that was across from the binyan, from the building on the north. So he brought me
out into the outer courtyard to this chamber, which is across from the sanctuary. That's where he brought me, on the north side.
El pnei orech amos hameyah, on the face of the length of 100 amos, pesach hatzafon, the opening towards the north, v'harochav chamishim amos, and the width 50 amos.
So what he just said is that this chamber was 100 amos by 50 amos, and there's an opening on the north. Here's the north side of the chamber. There's an opening. That's the main opening of the chamber.
Neged ha'esrim asher lechatzar ha'pnimi. This is opposite the 20 amos. That's the 20 amos that flanks the side of the sanctuary. That is to the inner courtyard. V'neged ritzefa asher lechatzar achitzona, and opposite the ritzefa. You'll recall the ritzefa. Ritzefa means the what was the word we used? The ritzefa means
balcony.
It is the balcony, but that's not literally what the word means. The word literally means
tiles.
Right, the tiles, meaning the balcony. You're correct. That was on the outer courtyard. Atik el pnei atik bashalishim. Atik towards atik in thirds. Now Rashi says over here, I don't know what atik el pnei atik means. Others suggest that it means pillars. One pillar facing another pillar in thirds. So what does it mean in thirds? So now this is a matter of debate, but it seems that this chamber here, the northwest chamber, actually was three chambers, one on top of the other. It was three chambers, and there were pillars holding up the different chambers. I'm picturing something like a parking garage, right? We have three levels and pillars holding up the levels. I don't mean there were no walls, but that the different floors were being held up by these pillars. V'lifnei halishachos, and in front of, now it says the plural, of the chambers, meaning the three chambers, the three-tiered chambers, mahalach eser amos, was a walkway of 10 amos, rochav, of the width, el apnimis, to the inner side, derech amo echas, through a path of one amma, ufischeihem latzafon, and they're opening to the north. Now that's a very cryptic pasuk. So the way Rabbi Eisman explains it is that the way to get to this chamber was there was a ten amma wide pathway. This is the 10 amma wide pathway. Now the truth is, it was really only 5 amos, what we would call wide. It was 10 amos long. Why is it saying wide? Because Rabbi Eisen says that because it's using the dimensions of the knife repository. That's, and the knife repository was 100 amos long by 10 amos wide. So that same 10 amma width was this walkway here, which was 5 amos, what we would call wide, and 10 amos long, but it says 10 amos wide because it's referring to this area of the knife repository. And you got there by going through a path which was 1 amma wide, which is right over here.
Oh, wow.
This 1 amma wide path took you to a 10 amma wide path, which then opened up into 20 amos and then got you into the chamber.
One amma wide, that's very small.
Very narrow.
What's that?
It's a foot and a half,
18 inches. A foot and a half, yeah. It's not so narrow that you can't walk, but it's not, you certainly can't.
How much would that be in this room? From where to where?
It's probably the width of this table.
That's the width?
Were they allowed to take carts and things? Like if they had a lot of meat, they could take carts or carrying it on trays?
I don't know.
They had to carry the sheep through there, too.
The sheep had been slaughtered already, so they were now taking the meat that had to be eaten.
And if we have three levels there, is it just as tall as...
It's not clear.
Is it stairs or ramps?
We're not given any other hints. We don't know how they would get from one floor to the other. Maybe there was an elevator.
There could be an elevator. Spiral staircases again.
Yeah. Look, we're talking about the future.
Yeah, it could be an elevator.
Maybe there'll be elevators.
Obviously, they didn't have stairs even with the altar, so I would think that you know, don't they have ramps going around to get to all three levels of the Kodesh HaKodesh?
Yeah.
So, but they don't say here what they have.
the chambers that are around the Kodesh HaKodesh had spiral staircases that went up to each level.
They had that also, and a ramp. Mm-hmm. So, but here, there's no description at all. If there were three levels, which it seems there were, it doesn't describe at all how they got from one to the other.
Yeah, but the ramp doesn't have any entrance way to the rooms.
True.
They couldn't use the ramp to get the rooms if there's no entrance way.
Right.
If we're meant to learn this and see what it's going to be, why is it so complicated? Why is it not...
I don't know why. I don't know.
I wonder why the Nungis weren't like artists also, so that Hashem would give them the plan and they would draw it down for all time.
I think it would be deliberately not done that way, because then it would sometimes a chart stunts a person's ability to study with a chart already feeds it to us.
Mm-hmm.
We're not figuring it out. Now, we are not on the level to figure it out without the chart. But it's a much more meaningful learning if we figure out the chart on our own.
I think it's just proof that it will be brought down by Hashem that we're not building it.
I'm not sure. I don't know. You understand that every nuance in the Beis HaMikdash has level upon level upon level of depth to it, of why... we talked about the directions, the north, south, east, and west, but besides that, just the whole, why is this path over here, and why is this wall over there, why is this five almost thick, and this is six almost thick, and this window is here, and this ramp is over there, and this chamber is here, all of that has depth upon depth of understanding to it, and we're just getting the basics, like this is what we're hoping we have an accurate picture, and, one could really delve into this over and over again. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Va'alishachos ho'el yonos kitzuros, and the upper chambers were narrow. Now, they were narrow. Now, this is going to be a little bit misleading. Ki yochlu atikim mehena, for the pillars would eat from them, which means they would take up space. Mehatachtonos, from the bottom ones, umeatichonos, and from the middle ones, binyan, part of the building. Now, this is a very difficult pasuk to read. The idea that's being expressed over here is there were three levels, and they had pillars to hold up the different levels. Well, you don't need a pillar holding up the third level. You only need a pillar on the bottom level, which holds up the floor of the second level. They need the pillar to continue and hold up the floor of the third level. But from the third level to the ceiling, you don't need a support pillar, because that's no different than any other building. And there was no extra weight from the ceiling to hold up above the level of the third level. So, right, am I making sense? If you have a building, you have a skyscraper, so the lower levels, there the support beams have to be much stronger, because it's supporting a lot more weight than the upper levels, which are supporting a lot less weight. And that is in fact the case. here as well, what's being expressed is that the pillars were only needed on the first floor and on the second floor. But on the third floor, it was only holding up one ceiling. You didn't need extra pillars. Now, the pillars were thick. They were at the wall, but they jutted into the building as well. So some of the floor space was taken up by pillars. As we know, anytime you have a pillar, then you take up floor space. That's why when they build big halls, they have to be creative and have to do it in a way where they won't use pillars, because pillars take away from usable space. You don't want pillars. So the pillars in the first and second levels took up some space. That's what it means. It ate some of the space. It ate it up because it took up some of the space. The third level didn't need it. Now, we'll get to your question in a moment. Just the way it says it is that the upper chambers were narrow. That sounds like the third level was narrow. But in fact, the third level was not narrow. The third level actually had more space than the first and second levels, because the first and second levels had these pillars that jutted into them, taking up some space. The third level didn't need those pillars, so there was actually more space on the third level than on the first two. So then why does it say that the third level, or the upper levels, were narrow? So this is creative. This is where the Metsudos says that when it says that the upper chambers were narrow, it does not mean the third floor of the chamber. What it means is the upper chambers, meaning the north and southwest chambers. The western chambers are called the upper chambers, while the eastern chambers are called the lower chambers. Why would one be called upper, one be called lower? Because, as you already know, the Har Habayis, the Temple Mount, got higher as you went along, which is why you have steps to get to the inner courtyard, and then more steps to get into the sanctuary, because you're getting a higher and higher level. Physically, you're moving up the mountain as you go. And so the chambers on the west side were actually several feet higher than the chambers on the east side. So when it says that the upper chambers were narrow, it does not mean the third floor of the northwest chamber. It means the chambers, the northwest and southwest chambers in the first two floors were narrow, which implies that in the northeast and southeast chambers, they were not three floors, which means they didn't need pillars, so they weren't narrow. The implication is that the only chambers that had pillars and consequently were narrow were the upper chambers, meaning the western chambers. That's the creative way that the Metsudos explains, and infers that therefore there must have been eastern chambers as well. So it's not explicit, it's inferred from here that there were eastern chambers as well. That is something which certainly I never would have figured out in a million years, but that is a very, very obscure reference.
Did the eastern chambers only have one floor?
It seems that way, because they didn't have pillars. So what's being said is that the western chambers were narrower, at least on the lower floors, than the eastern chambers were, because of these pillars. Now look at Pasuk Vav, verse 6, before we, this will round it out a little bit. Ki mishula shoshena, for they were three-tiered. Ve'en lahen amudim ki amudei hachatzeros. They didn't have pillars like the pillars of the courtyards. The pillars of the courtyards were narrower pillars. They didn't jut into the courtyard, taking up space in the courtyard. The pillars there were just part of the wall, as we've seen many times over here. Let's take, for example, let's take the entranceway, the entrance hall here. Well, you have walls, and then you have pillars acting as the ends of the walls. Similarly over here, the pillars act as the ends of the walls. They don't jut further into the courtyard, because they're not holding up a lot of weight. They're not needed to take up more space. But these pillars, which are not drawn in the picture, they apparently jutted into the space, the usable space of the chamber, because it was holding up a lot of weight in the three tiers. And therefore it took up some of the space of the bottom level and the middle level from the ground. Pasuk Zion, verse 7. V'goder asher lachutz l'umas halishachos. And the goder, now, goder means a wall. So, the wall that was on the outside towards the chambers, derech hechatzer hachitzona, through the outer courtyard, el pnei alishachos, on the face of the chambers, or kol chamishim ama, its length was 50 amos. That's a lot of words, which I'm not going to pin down each word, but the gist of it is, it's describing this wall. The wall was 50 amos long. This is the wall of the that was in the outer courtyard that separated between the outer courtyard and the chamber.
Didn't we know that when it said it was 50 amos?
But it didn't say there was a wall. It just said that there was a chamber. It didn't talk about the wall itself. Now you can ask your question. For the length of the chambers that were on the outer courtyard were 50 amos. And behold, on the face of the sanctuary, 100 amos. Now you can ask, and we know that already, which is a good question. I don't have an answer for you. Perhaps it's to show us that it's true for all of them, that they were all the same. Tess, verse 9. Umitachas halishachos ha'ele, and beneath these chambers, hameivime hakadim, coming from the east, bivao lahena, coming towards them, meachatzer hachitzona, from the outer courtyard. Now this really has very little meaning, the obvious meaning. Rashi isn't sure in this pasuk when it says under the chambers whether it's referring to a basement level, that in addition to the three tiers that were above ground, there may have been another level below ground, or is this a reference to eastern chambers as we have in our picture? That when it says, and under these, it doesn't mean physically beneath them, it means lower down the mountain on the eastern side of the courtyard, that you have these two other chambers. Berochav geder hechatzer, derech hakadim, on the width of the wall of the courtyard towards the east, el peneha gizra, on the face of the fortress, el peneha binyan, and on the face of the building, l'shachos, chambers. Very difficult to know what that's referring to. Each one, each of the Mefarshim uses this pasuk his own way, but it's not very clear what it means. On the face of the sanctuary towards the east, it's not clear exactly what's being described. V'derech lifnehem kimarei halishachos, and a path in front of them, like the appearance of the courtyards of the chambers. Ashaderech hatzafon, like on the way of the north, ki'arkan kein rachban, their length like their width, v'chol motzaihen uchamishpatehen uchefischehen, and like all that you find there, all of their laws and all of their doors, meaning that these other lishachos, these other chambers, followed the same pattern as the one we described in the north, in the northwest. We're going to do one more pasuk, just so we can be thoroughly confused. And like the entrances of the chambers that were in the south, Pesach Berosh Darech, an entranceway on the front of the path, Derech Bifnei HaGederes HaGina, a way in front of the Gederes HaGina, which I'll tell you what that is in a minute, Derech HaKadim Bevoan, the eastern way when they come in. It is beyond my capacity right now to go through this and pick it apart exactly. But this pasuk, which talks about a path from the south in front of this Gederes Hagina, the Gederes Hagina, the Targum says, I'll read it to you, the Targum says it is Duchan Leva'e. What is a Duchan? As in duchening? What's duchening?
Platform.
Okay, duchening is when the Kohanim give us a bracha. Right? They stand in front of us and give us a bracha. So, to duchan, what's the word duchaning? Where does duchan come from? Duchan means a platform, because they would stand on a platform when they did it. The Levium would also stand on a platform when they would play their instruments and sing in the Beis HaMikdash. In the second Beis HaMikdash, we know they did it on the steps. Here, there was a platform, and this platform was used both by the Levium to sing on and play their instruments, and for the Kohanim to bless the nation. This platform was in the inner courtyard.
This is the Gederas HaGidah?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was in the inner courtyard. That's his line over here, that this would be this platform. And that Rabbi Eisen understands, based on the Mitzvot, that what is being described is an entranceway from the eastern chambers that came into the inner courtyard in front of this platform. That's how he's understanding it. But as I said, it's very, very difficult to pick the pasuk apart and pull out all the words exactly what it is. You know, there's
Rabbi, did you say that there was a place where the Levium sang?
Yes.
I missed the part.
On a platform. This line is a platform.
Oh, so that's where they sat?
Stood. In the third Beis HaMikdash, that's what he's saying. Second Beis HaMikdash, they stood on steps.
Uh-huh.
But in the second Beis HaMikdash, in the third Beis HaMikdash,
how many
saying,
do we imagine being there?
What's that?
30, 50,
100? I don't know.
We know, was it an orchestra?
It was certainly a lot of Levium.
It was a lot of Levium.
But I don't
different
know.
Different instruments?
Yeah.
But you were referring to the eastern chambers, but I thought you said in the beginning that you didn't say that they necessarily were.
Right. I'm reading it the way Rabbi Eisman reads it, which is according to the Mitzvot, that there were eastern chambers. Right.
I'm still stuck on the three chambers.
Okay, go ahead.
So it doesn't say about windows. So especially in the middle floor, you don't have the doors. At least on the bottom floor, you have doors that have lights. They can see what's going on. But the middle floor, if there's no windows and they don't tell us anything about it, like, you're dark in there.
We have no idea. We have no idea.
The entire place has got to be dark.
Well, no, how do you think it's outside?
Think about
no, it.
Well, that's true. It's
open air.
Right. There's no roof. Yeah. But the second floor definitely has a roof, even if the top floor doesn't. Yeah.
I really don't know. I mean, you know,
Maybe he saw
compact fluorescent bulbs and you know, he had no words to describe it. I don't know.
Well, it could have the candles burning.
Yeah, I really don't know.
Holy light.
Okay. No. This is the stopping point. We're going to describe these chambers a little bit more in detail next time. So as I mentioned, the next class will be in 2 weeks. And then hopefully we'll finish off this parak and maybe do a little bit more.